Welcome back. This is an encore interview with our favorite Dr. Moshe Dekel and Carol Peterson. You might even recognize the old theme music, how fun it was, the Brazilian music. But now we have the song that my brother wrote for us, and we love that also. This is our annual post Thanksgiving show, talking about digestion. There couldn't be a better time to talk about digestion than Thanksgiving, post-Thanksgiving, and going directly into the holidays. So listen, learn, enjoy my favorite, absolutely favorite co-host. We'll be back next week live and continue our series on Back to Basics, discussing the basics of nutrition. Welcome back. Welcome back. This is Take Charge of Your Health with Corinne Fenari, clinical nutritionist and physician assistant. Every week, I present new and creative ways to help make sense of health information and bring it home to you and your family. With years of clinical experience and research into traditional and cutting-edge technologies, I give practical information to help you take charge of your health. Welcome back. Welcome back. It's the day after Thanksgiving. We've spent a day of appreciation of that which is around us, our families, our friends, our life, our struggles, our joys. And here we are, a little bit full, and ready to continue our lives. What a fun time. What you will be hearing is Take Charge of Your Health's annual show for the day after Thanksgiving. Since we come on Friday, Thanksgiving is always on Thursday. We have a tradition here. And what do we talk about? We talk about, what do you think? Digestion. How to make it better, how to stay healthier in times of celebration, how to feel better, and how to move forward. So I have my favorite people, Carol Peterson and Dr. Moshe Dekel, and we're here to appreciate and share with you just little tips that can assist you. And things, it's amazing how things that are ever so simple can make such big differences in your life. So listen, enjoy your time off for the rest of the weekend. Enjoy your family. Don't get caught up in the craziness of buying. Holidays aren't about purchases. They're about sharing. So let's put it back into perspective. They're about sharing with those you love, with those you care for, with those you associate with every single day. So enjoy the rest of your weekend and listen to the tips. They will help. We're going right into our conversation for the day, digestion. Enjoy. Now we're going to our traditional, regular, annual post-Thanksgiving show. And who do I have but my favorite people? Dr. Moshe Dekel to help us with this subject. He's been with us every year for at least 4 years. Every year, the day after Thanksgiving. And what do we discuss? We discuss digestion. What a surprise. And Carol Peterson. So welcome, Dr. Dekel.
great. Nice to be here, and happy holidays in advance.
Yes, definitely.
Actually, post-holidays advance.
Post-holiday. Today, we always talk about digestion. People are a little bit bloated, often a little gassy. There's lots of leftovers in the refrigerator.
And lots of overeating.
Lots of overeating. It's been quite celebratory in a very interesting way because it's got a lot to do with friends and family and just being together. And actually, the holiday is about eating and gathering and appreciation and Thanksgiving, exactly what it says. But here we are, the day after, and let's maybe you could help us put together or a strategy and understand a little bit about what we're feeling.
Sure. Yes, absolutely. Great start of this. And you know, unfortunately, we have to revisit this issue again and again because I think the majority of us, and I think including me, kind of tend to overeat over this beautiful holiday that we all have to give thanks. And again, we enjoy eating, and the food is great, and there's usually lots of it, and you start, and by the time you finish, you realize it's hard to get off the table because you, of course, overdid it. So the obvious thing is, you know, why did we do it to begin with? But, of course, we all fall in the same category. So I think that what we can do this evening is really discuss, number one, are there any tricks to kind of limit how much we eat? Is there any, you know, prolong, for instance, the chewing and give our stomachs time to actually realize that, yes, actually we're full and we should stop it? And also, post-eating, what kind of remedies can we do in order to help our digestion to kind of take care of the overly abundant food that we have just consumed? So I think if we can do that on both sides of the equation, I think we can have some good tips for our listeners.
Yes, I like that idea. So how would you like to begin?
Well, first and foremost, I think what we need to do is really gauge our meal. In other words, we know what we eat for a regular dinner, and we have to say, okay, we have, let's say, 6-7 items tonight. Well, I don't have to have all of them, or I can have a small representative section so I can enjoy the entire meal. Okay, so in other words, what we can do is avoid, let's say, okay, I'm going to have half the turkey and then also the stuffing, and then before you know it, I have no room for dessert, but I absolutely have to have desserts, and now we really overdo it. So I think planning is probably the best advice I can give people is like, okay, well, let's take it easy. Let's prolong the meal. In other words, enjoy it, of course. But if we give enough time for the stomach to actually send a message upstairs and say, hey, actually, hey, I'm full, and we stop, we just don't continue. So the thing is, a lot of us eat the entire day. I mean, we start with hors d'oeuvres and then the meal. You know, everybody knows the story. So again, what I need to do for myself is not to jump on the hors d'oeuvres and finish a quarter of them because I know I still have a lot to go. So I need to, from the beginning till the end, kind of gauge myself and really hope that I don't blow my quota, so to speak. And I think it really depends on how much effort we put into this and understanding that, hey, while we're enjoying it, if we're overdoing it, we're going to pay later, either by feeling bloated or gassy or constipation or even diarrhea. You know, there's the price to pay for overindulgence. So I think what we need to do is think about payment down the line and say, okay, am I willing to do it? And by then kind of realize, wait a minute, maybe I should really put in perspective and not overdo it so I don't have to pay the piper at the end of the meal.
There's another
little suggestion.
Carol?
I'm wondering, Dr. Dekel, Thanksgiving is one of those holidays where we load our plates with numerous kinds of food. We've got protein and turkey, and we've got potatoes, and we have stuffing, and we have vegetables, and we have fruit salad, and we have breads, and all sorts of kinds of foods.
Right.
Is there a better strategy? Maybe even though you're going to eat a bunch, would you not be better off limiting the different kinds of foods that you have instead of having a great big plate of a little bit of everything?
That's a very good point and very well said, in my opinion, because, again, as we well know, certain food combinations do not work very well. And the, you know, steak and potatoes that the majority of, not majority, but they used to be and probably still is the mainstay of a lot of us, really don't go together. I mean, if we have steak, we probably should have a vegetable with it rather than a potato or bread, et cetera. So your point is very well taken, and I think that if we can eliminate the bread and really cut down on the wheat product, I think it's a good measure to start with. Because bread, you know, bread we can eat just about every other day of the week. Why fill our quarter with bread? At least my opinion, personal opinion, maybe a lot, you know, people out there would think differently. But if it was me, I would not have bread at all during this holiday, okay? And actually, as far as the stuffing is concerned, you say, you know, it's made of breadcrumbs or, you know, et cetera. I personally try to stay away from it. Or if have it, really just have a taste, just to enjoy the taste. But I really would like to have, you know, the meat with some vegetable, of course, the salad. And I try to limit it to that. As far as dessert is concerned, you know, try to keep it at minimum and also give myself enough time to digest so, I don't load everything up. Usually meal takes a couple of hours. So, you know, pace yourself. And as far as dessert is concerned, you know, try to do a sampling. Or if you're strong enough to say, you know what, I had my meal, I don't need to have the desserts, that's fine, that's great, it's even better. The question is how much willpower we have to say no to these beautiful desserts that everybody brought as part of the meal, and we can say no. If we can, that's great, health-wise. But, of course, a lot of us blow that, and now we have to decide, well, how are we going to minimize the consequence, so to speak?
The consequences can be minimized by the day after. If we feel, it doesn't have to be a weekend of overindulgence. It can be a day of overindulgence. And then the food can be put away. The desserts can be frozen, brought out another week, or foods can be made much lighter, and people just feel better when they eat a little bit lighter. I also think there's two little tricks that are really minor, but yet make a great impact. One is enzymes with your meal. You know, we really have the case of the disappearing enzymes, and they're disappearing from two levels. They're disappearing from the foods we eat because of the fact that many of the foods that we eat are very devitalized. And they're also disappearing from the fact that our bodies are not producing them in a way necessary for the intake. One thing that we're doing, that we have a habit of doing, is we have ice water on the table.
Mm-hmm.
And what does...
I was going to ask about that.
Well, our ice water is very interesting in that our enzymes are temperature sensitive. They have a narrow range. And when you pour cold into your stomach while you're eating, your enzymes literally stop functioning. They're turned off by the extra cold water. So one, if you're going to drink with dinner and want to drink something, I'd drink either a room temperature water with a piece of lemon in it or a piece of cucumber in it. Both of those can really advance digestion. But I would stay away from ice water. And I would also, if we feel it's necessary, I would take some enzymes. I personally, due to the fact that my thyroid is slow, I find that bile salts or ox bile are very effective enzymes. They help that gallbladder release. They thin the bile. They thin the fats. And they help the food move right down that 20-foot length of small intestine and start it moving very effectively. Carol?
Well, another question I have around the water is there's some people at a camp that you shouldn't drink water with your meal, that you dilute your digestive juices. And then others will encourage the drinking of water. And it comes to my mind is maybe those digestive juices do depend on a little lubrication from the extra water. I'm just curious to find out what camp you guys are in.
That's a very good point. I'm in the camp that we should limit our water intake during the meal. To my mind, and especially, I definitely agree with Corinne's assertion that ice water should not be part of our meal. If it has to be, in my opinion, room temperature water. 2 ounces should be fine. More than that, I do believe they dilute the hydrochloric acid that's being secreted. In other words, it interferes with the high acidity that needs to be the environment of the stomach. Okay, so therefore, a few things are happening. The proteins are not going to be worked on by the hydrochloric acid and therefore not denatured in preparation of the pancreatic enzymes to actually break down the protein into its amino acid components. Also, the fact that if we do not have high acidity, like we should, in the first phase of digestion in the stomach, that is. Also, we do not sterilize the food completely, and therefore we are going to expose ourselves to parasites and other possible pathogens that can cause infection.
So food poisoning.
I'm in the camp of a moderate water. I'd rather suggest to drink water before the meal, and during the meal, probably 2 or 4 ounces, really, just to kind of ease up the passage of the food through the esophagus. But other than that, my suggestion is to limit the water intake.
Now, there are two schools in this arena also. I'm from California. The first course is always raw. It's a raw salad with a little vinegar, a little olive oil, but it's always raw. I came to the East Coast. The last course, and in Europe also, the last course is raw. It's a little raw vegetable, and even sometimes dessert is sliced fennel, sliced apple, sliced pear, and a little thin slices of cheese. So, that raw...
Raw cheese.
Raw there has enzymes, and those enzymes assist our own body enzymes in digestion. Okay, so which camp are you in? The before the meal or at the end of the meal? What do you think benefits more in terms of digestion?
I'm in the camp of the salad first.
Salad first.
I
agree. California boy.
I agree wholeheartedly with your enzyme picture. I think that not only the food is depleted with enzymes, but also the fact that most of the meal is cooked, other than, of course, the salad. Even if we had enzymes in that part of the meal, if we heat it up more than 120 degrees Fahrenheit, I mean, we don't have any live enzymes. So I think the preparation of digestions by giving us those enzymes with the raw salad, I think it's a good idea. But I absolutely agree with you, Corinne, when you said that we need to have more enzymes, actually double dose because of the amount of food we eat to help our digestion. And quite frankly, I believe that all of us should take digestive enzyme regardless of Thanksgiving or not. I take it with every meal. Why? Because I realize that enzymes are very precious. They do a lot of important steps in digestion, and I would like to have the best digestion possible to keep my health at, you know, peak form. So I think it's very, very important.
I remember going to restaurants, and they would call them supper clubs or whatever, and they would always bring to your table a tray of vegetables and maybe some dips, and you'd start with that. And that seems to make a whole lot more sense to me than currently. What do they bring you? A bread basket and butter. What does that do to your digestion?
And the vegetables often that they bring, in Europe anyway, are all fermented. In Greece, they're fermented, little pickles and little root vegetables. And then olives also. They're all fermented vegetables that you sit there. There's very small amount. And you pick on these as you're waiting for your food to come. They're quite delicious, but they're also vinegary. So having the vinegar, the fermented food, the enzyme, you've got it all, don't you?
Are you including wine in that? Fermented red wine?
I hadn't, but you can also. Now, wine is an aperitif in that it stimulates appetite. And it also suppresses some of that social inhibition center so that your appetite is stimulated and your ability to resist goes down. So there you are.
I guess eat too much.
It's very possible that that's what they give to many people who have very bad appetites, just a little bit of wine. But what do you think of bitters, Dr. Deckel?
Bitters have been noticed for generations, I mean, really millennium of helping digestion. They're more, I would say, prevalent in Eastern societies, but I think they migrate into the Mediterranean basin, where the Italians, for instance, are very big on the bitters, and so are the Greeks. So I believe that around the Mediterranean, you're going to find it. Again, if you go to northern Africa, it's also very prevalent. So obviously, those generations knew that utilizing those bitters helped digestion. So they do. Of course, if we do have any digestive issues, I'd be, you know, cautious about it. I would not overdo it. I would try it first before I kind of plunge wholeheartedly into large amounts. But, you know, I think that they've been proven over generations that they're very, very effective in supporting digestion.
Bitters are often made of a raw artichoke. And that is an extremely bitter vegetable. But it also is a very important vegetable for stimulating the release of fats and cholesterol, which is then concentrated into bile and the release of bile into the intestines. So you can't really take many that if they're real bitters. They're real bitter. And you're there puckering away as you're sipping on a drop or two, a very small amount, before your meal. And what is it doing? It's stimulating your own body to make enzymes and prepare for the food that's coming. Sometimes there are some bitters. Italians have bitters for before the meal. They also have another form of bitter for after the meal. And both of those assist or in digestion. Dr. Deckel?
That's true. In fact, in Italian, because I was in Italy for 6 years medical school, they used to call it dopo digestivo.
Oh, yes.
In English,
yes.
After digestion.
Dopo digestivo.
In other words, they had special bitters. And again, the commercial name escapes me, but it's a big culture in in Italy because I was there, so I'm aware of it. But you're absolutely right. You can have it before, you can have it after. It all depends on your belief and how you're being kind of inducted into the ceremony of bidders. But absolutely correct.
Mm-hmm. So what can we do to stimulate stomach acid?
Well, very good. Actually, you mentioned vinegar before. Apple cider vinegar with water, I would use probably 2 tablespoons in water. I would say probably 30, 20 minutes before the meal. Definitely improve secretions of hydrochloric acid, notoriously. And that's a very simple, natural way of stimulating the stomach to make its own hydrochloric acid. Me personally, I do that, but also at the end of the meal, I do not rely completely on apple cider vinegar. I actually take a generous amount of about 1,000 milligrams of edible hydrochloric acid. Okay, that's, we have to make sure that people don't think that hydrochloric acid is the hydrochloric acid used in the lab. This is, we're talking about edible hydrochloric acid, usually made from beets. That's why usually it's called betaine HCl. And again, you have to take it with some consideration because, again, if you overdo it, you're going to have what? You're going to have heartburn. Okay, so we have to be aware that we cannot just take it without consideration.
But if we do get some heartburn, mm-hmm. then we can just eat something a little starchy, mm-hmm. Which will bring it down. And then the next time we use it, we use just a little bit less. So it's not a situation of danger. Sometimes there's even recommendations to take enough hydrochloric acid mm-hmm. till you start feeling that heartburny sensation and then back down one.
Absolutely.
And that's your correct dose.
Yeah, absolutely. Great way to decide how much you need. Also, another way, if you do overdo it, then as long as you make sure, at least what I offer my patients is make sure you have a little bit of aloe vera liquid in your cupboard and aloe vera, organic aloe vera juice, whole, not just water, but the entire fruit, the entire, not fruit, but leaf, actually will quench or resolve any heartburn within minutes. And no side effects.
You're listening to Take Charge of Your Health, and this is our annual Thanksgiving show with Dr. Moshe Dekel and pharmacist Carol Peterson. We're going to a short break. You're listening to Take Charge of Your Health, and this is our annual Thanksgiving show with Dr. Moshe Dekel and pharmacist Carol Peterson.
What I offer my patients is make sure you have a little bit of aloe vera liquid in your cupboard and aloe vera, organic aloe vera juice, whole, not just water, but the entire fruit, the entire, not fruit, but leaf. Actually will quench or resolve any heartburn within minutes and no side effects. So let's not resolve to antacids, which are definitely in our field is a big no-no, I would assume. Everybody agrees with that. But I think that's always a good way to handle occasional stomach upsetment by having purchase of aloe vera juice, in my experience, has been effective in minutes. What do you think?
I love it, and then I also, with the aloe vera juice, I chew on a supplement that's made of licorice, and so I use the liquid of the aloe vera juice to kind of wash down that licorice, and I have been very successful with that. But you know what else? So many millions of us are constipated and with irritable bowel. And I have found aloe vera not a laxative. It's almost like a bowel softener that helps stimulate the bowel to move through. There are two that I like. I know there are more. There's some aloe vera that's used as an antiviral, but for digestion, there's two that I like. And I like the one from Trader Joe's. It's a very good price, and you get a half a gallon, and you can take 3 or 4 ounces. You can take it every day. It's not addictive, and it starts your bowels becoming regular for the first time in your life. But there's a couple other secrets I'm going to finish up with. But then for children, it's a little strong tasting. So for children who are having stomach aches and who have these very large, oversized bowels, for these teeny little bodies, how did this happen? It happened because they're constipated. And even if they're going once a day, they're still constipated. So you give them, and this is the one I like for them because it's very mild in flavor. And it's also a little milder. It's called George's. And you buy a gallon of that, and you give them 2 ounces in the morning and 2 ounces in the evening. And then you also tell the child, after breakfast, they have to sit on the toilet. They can't have a book. They can't have an iPad. They can't have an iPhone. They can't have anything. And they have to sit there for 5 minutes. But you know what? You don't even care if they go to the bathroom. It doesn't matter. And then after they get home from school, they sit on the toilet for 5 minutes. It doesn't matter whether they go or not. And before bed, they do the same thing. And what starts happening is you start retraining their bodies to the signal. Kids are too busy to sit on the toilet. And in school, they don't want to. Go on.
Corinne, I think this is a great advice. You know, and it's so apropos because I don't know about you, but I'm sure that when you ask your patients, they talk to you about their kids, et cetera, and you say, well, how often they move their bowels? And they look at you and say, I don't know. They really don't know. That means what? That they have not been paying attention to that. And kids don't realize. They're not being told that, you know, physiologically we need to move our bowels after each meal. How would they know? And how would the parents know if they don't ask that the kids didn't go to the bathroom for 3 days? And then they come down with, what, severe stomach aches. So what did they do? They take to the doctor who's going to give them some prescription drugs.
Oh, they want them on.
Whereas the only thing they need is really give them the right food, give them the right amount of water, give them the right amount of fiber with the right amount of, you know, enzymes, of course. And the child will move their bowels, period. I mean, the infants do it after each meal, right? How come? Well, because they have a reflex that they haven't learned how to overcome yet, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, what happens when we learn how to control our bowel? Well, we forget that we need to move our bowel.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we see it again and again, also in adults. You know, how many times we ask the patients, you know, how often you move the bowel? 3 to 4 days. And when they see our reaction, they said, I've been like this all my life. In other words, that specific item that they've been like this all their life makes it right. Instead of, oh my goodness, you've done this all your life. You can imagine the toxicity level that you have because you've been recycling the toxins again and again and again because we haven't eliminated them. So once you educate our patients, now that they will, you know, and once they start moving their bowels at least once or twice a day, it's a different how they feel. I
mean, oh, they feel feeling. Very different. Very different.
There's another little piece I'd like to get in here because we talked about stomach acid, but I think we should also talk about bicarbonate, which comes from the pancreas. And if your pancreas is not making enough, your stomach won't empty. And people hours later have not emptied their stomach, and a little sodium bicarbonate can work miracles for those people with that particular digestive problem. And I think that's where products like Alka-Seltzer have made their mark.
It's a point well taken. Again, the digestive, the bicarb that the pancreas secretes is as the food is emptying from the stomach, gets to the duodenum, the first part of the small intestine. There's a reflex that actually causes release of bicarb. And the reason is very simple. Whereas the enzymes in the stomach are specifically designed to work in an acidic environment, the enzymes in the small intestines are designed to work in an alkaline environment. So here you have a mass of food that comes down from the stomach, loaded with hydrochloric acid, very acidic. If the pancreas is going to release all its enzymes in that kind of environment, they're going to do just about nothing. So there's copious amount. I mean, the pancreas is a very, very hard working organ. We don't even know about it. Secretes quite a lot of sodium bicarb to actually prepare the ground for the enzyme. Now, as far as the Alka-Seltzer, again, the majority of people will take it because they have heartburn. Okay, so again, my suggestion would be instead of taking the Alka-Seltzer, I would do the aloe vera again. That would be my preferred choice rather than to give it the Alka-Seltzer. But again, mm-hmm. if you look at the consumption of gastric remedies in this country, I mean, we're talking about billions per year. So a lot of people use it.
About 14 billion per year is spent on GI remedies. When so many of them can be so reasonable and so effective. You know, just in the winter, I never make it in the summer. I make it in the winter. At night, if I'm hungry, I take ginger and grind it up and pour boiling water over it and put a little stevia in there. And drink this ginger. It goes into my belly, and it's like having a little furnace in there, radiating heat out to my fingers and my toes, and it just makes me feel so good, and warms me up on a cold winter night, which is happening at this point as we speak, and it's such a cheap and easy way to help digestion, and it's a natural anti-inflammatory.
Right.
And all cultures have little tricks like that that work very effectively for digestion without the calcium channel, the calcium pills, and or the Prilosec or the Prevacid. I know that pediatricians are telling some mothers to give their kid Prevacid for 30 days and we'll have a diagnosis. And
oh my gosh.
And you look at Prevacid and what is it? It's 24-hour. It's a 24-hour acid blocker. And here you have a child that's constipated. So it's a pretty scary thing. But,
go ahead.
No.
Antacids are really, and the proton pump inhibitors are probably one of the main reasons why so many of us are having digestive issues. I mean, they're good in stopping the heartburn. I grant you that. But as we discussed, we need to have an acidic environment, okay? Here we have just the opposite, so the food is not digested. The proteins go down the intestinal canal undigested. They start to rot, causing inflammation. And as we know, inflammation is really the mother of all chronic diseases. So you say, well, what do? I mean, if you have heartburn, you have to treat it. Right. Well, again, we in holistic medicine are looking at this from a totally different perspective. We are saying that it's not that we have overabundance of acid, because the body, being as smart as it is, does not make anything more than what it needs, okay? Making hydrochloric acid from salt, HCl, is very costly energetically. So if anything, what's causing this acidity or heartburn is the fact we don't have enough acid. We don't have enough acid. What happens, the food ferments, the byproduct is lactic acid. The junction between the esophagus and the stomach do not close because it's not enough acid to cause the reflex to close the sphincter, so it's open. So now we have food that's not digested, fermented, causing lactic acid that now can move upwards into the esophagus because the sphincter is not closed. Et voila, now we have a terrific heartburn, and now instead of quenching it, let's say, with aloe vera, and of course, next time, let's prevent it by what? Taking the water with what? The apple cider vinegar, just to prepare ourselves, eat more sensibly to prevent this. Here we are taking massive amount of medications that actually, for lack of a better word, destroys anything below the stomach as far as digestion is concerned, and we pay high price with inflammatory diseases, and we don't connect the fact that we have arthritis, and we have headaches, and we have heart disease, and we have a variety of other issues that are directly related to what's happening in the gut, unfortunately. And we can all prevent this relatively simply, and that's why we're talking about it.
I wanted to bring up also a little bit about the calcium tablets that people chew. Mm-hmm. For digestion. You know, our maximum daily dose of calcium should be 2,000 milligrams maximum. I never give that much, but 2,000 milligrams a day. Now, each one of those little tablets is 1,000. And people are chewing 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 a day.
Right.
And toxifying themselves with calcium when there are much more effective ways to balance your digestive enzymes and allow that food to move through the stomach a little bit faster and not experience this reflux that you're experiencing, that you need to take this alkalizer for, and that's the calcium antacids. So remember, we're looking at increased incidences of just a calcium toxicity with these calcium antacids. So we want to look at these alternative digestive methods so that we don't have to resort to these. And I think we're listing some of them. Dr. Deckel, have you used the D-limonene and the buckthorn oil for digestive?
No, I have not. I've been using limonene locally. I found that limonene helps temporarily, actually aches and pains to a great degree. but I definitely would like to listen to how you use it.
Well, there is a formula that is a mix of D-limonene and buckthorn oil, and then you put that with the licorice root extract, and then you can drink a little bit of aloe, and I find it pretty much a slam dunk. I find it a slam dunk for reflux, for gassiness, for constipation, for hard stools with a lot of pushing. I find it very effective. Actually, I love digestive problems. because
it's relatively easy to get rid of them. And, you know, when you help patients so drastically, they're really converting themselves to listen to holistic medicine. So I hear what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're being facetious. Yeah, we love it. No, we don't love it. But what we do, it's relatively so easy to treat it because we know what people need to eat. So, of course, that's up to them. We cannot make them eat anything they, you know, that they don't want, do want to eat. But the additives or the supplementation that we or the formulas we give them are relatively not complicated, yet they get tremendous relief. I mean, can you imagine somebody that has stomach upset or IBS or Crohn's or ulcerative colitis or whatever the case may be, to move them from that kind of state to not have the problem? I mean, they think that you're God. Right, you know, some of, I can't believe after all these years, now I have a life.
It freed. I had a patient come in crying. I said, "Is there a problem? What's the problem?" She said no, and she showed me. She handed me something. I look at it. It's tickets for a trip to Italy. And I said, "What's the problem?" She said, "All my life I've wanted to travel, but my bowels have been so bad. I wasn't able to. And after working with you for a period of time," this wasn't one visit, this was a period of time, she said, my husband and I are traveling.
Right. No, but it's almost like a disability. I mean, a lot of people actually plan their day according to their bowel requirements and their bladder requirements. I mean, we don't realize because people don't talk about it in the social gathering, but they tell us, don't they?
Oh, they sure do.
Yeah, and it's really, I mean, just think about it.
Well, we've got...
You can't go traveling because your bowels will not allow you.
Oh, how frightening.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's really frustrating. I mean, you have the time, you have the ability, you have the monetary ability to do this, your bowels will not allow you to get out of your hometown. Because why? Because you don't want to get in a situation whereby what? You're totally constipated, you don't move your bowels for 10 days, and you're abroad. And what are you going to do? You go to the emergency room in some strange country? What are you going to do? So they stay home.
We're getting close to our time. But I wanted to mention something.
Fast.
I know it always does. It always does. But I wanted to mention the trillions of bacteria in our intestines that are literally just being wiped out by a couple of things. One, by antibiotics that we take or we ingest in much of the food we eat. And another, by just bad eating habits and how important it is to maintain and replenish that probiotic or bacteria. And I rotate mine. I take probiotics, but I rotate them regularly.
Different strains,
fermented foods, kefir, yogurt, this brand, that brand, all good brands.
Right.
Always.
Yeah. This is so important. If we said nothing today, the fact that you mentioned probiotics, I think it's so important. We need to realize that we have more bacteria in the gut than cells in our body. Think about it. So we are really carrying another whole organism within ourselves. To think that we are not going to be affected by the type of organism that we host is really plain, I don't know, stupidity, I would say, or not knowing about it. But now that we know about it, we can escape it. It is my opinion that we absolutely should not leave home without it. We should have probiotics, and I agree, rotation is great. Not only that, but a lot of us have overgrowth of yeast, and sometimes we need to take a friendly yeast called Saccharomyces boulardii. I know it's a toothbreaker, but you can research it. Saccharomyces is very easy to find, and that will help us with the yeast because it's a friendly yeast that gets bad yeast out of town. Very, very, very important. We there's no day that we should not take probiotics. I agree with you 100%.
So when we're setting the table for Thanksgiving, we should have condiments, which include apple cider vinegar, probiotics, little bowl of enzymes. Would you agree?
Absolutely. Or, if you take, let's say, as we said before, fermented foods are tremendously mm-hmm. rich in probiotics. I mean, they contain trillions and trillions of bacteria colonies. So in lieu of, for that specific time, if you don't want to take, let's say, a pill of probiotics, I would take the fermented foods. But I agree with you that we should have, it's going to be very interesting because for our listeners who will put this on the table, it will spur a very interesting conversation. They say, what the hell is this? What is this? What do you want us to do with this? Well, you tell them what you heard. And it's relatively easy to get those, and they're really not expensive, okay? And really educate the entire family about what you can do to maintain your gut health. So I really think it's a great idea. And personally, I think it will spur a very interesting conversation.
So I want to thank you, Dr. Dekel. Always, always, always appreciate you.
We love this. We love this conversation.
So, can you give us your website?
Sure. My website is www.drdekel.com. drdekel.com. The number is 516-208-6617. 208-6617. And my email is on my website. Very easy to get.
So thank you very much. And now you know why I said I'm talking with my favorite people. Thanks, Carol.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Glenn,
happy holidays to all.
And you
thank
too.
Thank you.
Happy holidays to all. Don't eat too much.
And we'll be back next
All right,
next
guys.
Week.
We'll see you after the show.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Take care. Bye-bye.
As I speak with you, my home is filled with lots of sounds of family and friends still here for the weekend. So enjoy your weekend, and we'll be back next week. Bye-bye. Concluding today, I'd like you to remember, this information is not a substitute for treatment. As always, we urge you to take this and all other information we share to your healthcare practitioner. Clearly, this comes under the category of taking charge of your health. You can find me on Facebook, Corinne Fornari, RPA, CCN, that's CORINNE FURNARI, or my website, FornariHealth.com, or my office number,
212-219-0700. That's 212-219-0700.
Thank you for sharing this time with me, and I'll see you next week. Bye-bye. Se o tempo leva nosso
gente só lembra que se ama. Nosso encanto não se perde jamais. Quando a gente se encontra, esse amor é mais forte. Sempre que a gente se vê, esse amor é de morte. Como foi bom, como foi bom, 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 bom te encontrar. Como foi lindo te conhecer. Como foi bom, 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 bom te encontrar, te encontrar. Antes de acordar, eu escuto assim: amanheceu, flores belas. Amanheceu, flores belas. Como foi bom, como foi bom, 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 bom te encontrar. Como foi lindo te conhecer, amor. Como foi bom, 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 bom te encontrar. Como foi lindo te conhecer. Pra gente